This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Bill C-34, the Safe Social Media Act, has quickly become a lightning rod for debate since its introduction earlier this month. The issue that has invariably topped the list for discussion is the kids' social media ban, which proponents argue is needed as a stopgap measure to protect children while companies address ongoing design and safety concerns, while critics, myself included, make the case that the bans don't work, can actually place kids at greater risk, and cause broader societal harms, including serious privacy risks. Now, Bill C-34, along with the recently introduced Bill C-36, a privacy reform bill, will be covered from multiple angles on this podcast in the weeks ahead. For the moment, I'm pleased to rebroadcast a recent episode of the Globe and Mail's The Decibel podcast. I was invited to appear on the program, where, as you will hear, I was interviewed by Cheryl Sutherland about Bill C-34, the ban, and online harms and safety more broadly. I'm grateful to the Globe for granting permission to rebroadcast the episode on my podcast, Uncut, in its entirety.
We now have a sense of the government's plans to regulate online harms. On Wednesday, the federal government unveiled the Safe Social Media Act.
The act will establish a minimum age of 16 to have a social media account.
That's Mark Miller, Minister of Canadian Identity and Culture.
The act will require social media platforms and AI chatbot services to do more to protect children and make their platforms safe by design.
This legislation has been in the works for a while. It's the third time the Liberals have tried to tackle online harms in the past 5 years. And as Minister Miller says, the bill has a strong focus on protecting kids. The goal here is to compel social media and AI chatbot companies to adapt their products to mitigate harmful online content, like bullying, content that can lead a child to self-harm, or inciting violence. It also introduces age verification for adult content online. What's getting a lot of attention is a measure to ban children under the age of 16 from having accounts on regulated social media platforms, at least until the platforms can comply with new design requirements. This will all be enforced by a new regulator called the Digital Safety Commission, which will oversee and enact these rules. Dr. Michael Geist is our guest today. He's a law professor at the University of Ottawa, where he holds the Canada Research Chair in Internet and E-commerce Law. He'll give us his take on the strengths and weaknesses of the legislation, and whether he thinks the government is striking the right balance in order to protect Canadians from online harms. I'm Cheryl Sutherland, and this is The Decibel from the Globe and Mail. Hi, Michael. Welcome to The Decibel.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So we will get into some of the details of this proposed legislation. But before we do, what was your overall impression of the Safe Social Media Act?
Well, on the one hand, I was happy to see some of the, I think, good policies that we found in the earlier bill resurface yet again. Notably, this notion of a duty to act responsibly as a foundation for how we approach the idea of regulating social media companies and potentially AI chatbots as well. I think that offers some flexibility. It offers the potential, I think, for real regulation and for some better safety measures long term for Canadians. So I was certainly happy to see that. But of course, the focal point for many was the social media ban, which I think is a mistake and bad policy. And once you scratch below the surface a little bit, candidly, you find that so many of the decisions associated with what the law will actually mean and how it will actually work have been punted either to a future cabinet or to this Digital Safety Commission that, of course, as of now, doesn't even exist.
Something you mentioned there that you do like is this idea of flexibility. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, I like it in part because I think we need to recognize that services, if we're talking about AI chatbots or talking about social media companies, or frankly, it could be other services. There is the prospect of including other operators that are on the web or applications as well. One size fits all when dealing with these different kinds of services, I don't think works. You know, the reality is a chatbot and a social media company aren't the same for the purposes of some of the harms that might arise or some of the design issues that we might want to focus on. And so having that kind of overall framing around a duty to act responsibly to be fleshed out in terms of what that might mean for design, what it might mean from a transparency perspective, I think is the right way to go. It I think better ensures that we can have fit for purpose rules for the various kinds of services.
Okay, let's talk about one thing you said that you are not in agreement with, which is this headline part of the legislation, right? Which is this ban for those under 16 from regulated social media platforms until those companies or platforms comply with child safe design requirements. What are the privacy issues you see here? Let's start with that.
Sure. So we start with privacy. I think there are a number of concerns here, but privacy is a good place to start. And the privacy concerns are that if you take an approach like this, where you say that the service should be unavailable for a certain segment of users and you define it by age, what you effectively do is ensure that everyone who uses the service has to move ahead with verifying how old they are. You know, to ensure that it's only people over 16, you've got to ensure that they're over 16. And so that means that tens of millions of Canadians are going to have to go through some sort of age verification process or potentially what's known as an age estimation process. And that's for using everything from posting a picture to Facebook or Instagram to TikTok to potentially even registering an account for comment on a service like Reddit. But that idea of tens of millions having to age verify, likely to a third-party company located outside the country where Canadian privacy laws may be less effective, I think poses pretty significant privacy risk.
Right. When it comes to age estimation, this is the idea that basically some of these companies kind of have a sense of who you are online and what you click on, and therefore they're estimating your age based on your usage, right?
Yeah, it's actually a bit more than that. So it starts by actually looking at your picture online. So you know, open up your camera, let's see what your face looks like. And they try to estimate how old you are based on that. Now, for someone like myself, this will be pretty easy to determine that I'm over the age of 16. But when we're talking about trying to determine between 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, that becomes much more difficult. And so what these age estimation technologies then do is that they then dig into who are your friends? What kind of language do you use when you post? Where do you visit if you can capture some of those sorts of things? And so suddenly you're engaged in widespread surveillance for the purposes of trying to identify how old someone is. And all of that is being done in part because there is concern about using the age verification model, the other model, because that involves having to both take a picture and upload ID, because you've got to ensure that the ID belongs to the specific person, which creates a potential honeypot for large amounts of government-issued IDs. And in fact, we have seen security breaches in the past. Discord, for example, a number of months ago had 70,000 IDs hacked. And if you're going to build this up for a full population, as is largely envisioned by this law, that's a pretty ripe target for someone who wants to gain access.
So the argument here is that like this perhaps could lead into kind of a surveillance state.
Well, it definitely, I think, increases the amount of surveillance as part of that process. And I think, to be clear, this notion of having to ensure that everybody has to go through this process, I think, frankly, raises some constitutional related issues, both in terms of shutting off a segment of society who also has charter rights in terms of access to freedom, and creates obviously barriers for people who want to gain access. And there are even questions as to who will collect this. You know, this law also weaves in some of the pornography sites. Well, when we've talked about with other legislation the possibility of age verification or age estimation for pornography sites, it's been clear nobody wants those sites to have this ID. People are really sensitive about having their IDs collected by those kinds of sites. Again, the legislation doesn't make clear who exactly is doing this. Are we doing one-off identifications to each of these individual sites? Are we doing it to some third party? Can we trust that third party? There are no Canadian-based services right now that offer these kinds of services. There's a lot of question marks. And what we do know is that experts in the field have quite recently called for a moratorium on using these kinds of technologies until, frankly, the technology gets a whole lot better in terms of being able to assure that we've got effective privacy.
You know, the argument from the government is that, you know, we need to sacrifice a certain level of privacy in order to protect children. But what do you see as a better solution here?
Well, I think some of the better solution actually is in the law. So that duty to act responsibly, I think, is a good starting point. Age-appropriate design, better transparency about some of the rules, and real liability where these companies fail to live up to the rules. I mean, frankly, that's the framing that you need, I think, to deal with some of these issues. And I think it makes it a safer and better environment for everyone. This sideline, which becomes sort of the focal point, I think feels like a bit of a Band-Aid. The truth is, we don't know a single company that is even subject to this law because all of that is to be decided by the government. We don't know what age verification has to look like because that's still to be decided by either Cabinet or the Digital Safety Commission. And then the companies themselves don't know how to make this temporary because those rules are also to come from a Digital Safety Commission. We're talking about a major undertaking that is going to take years. Mm-hmm. And so honestly, if you're a teenager that is concerned right now that you're afraid that you're going to be blocked from being able to use social media, in some ways you can breathe a bit easier because the likelihood that this is going to be effectively implemented while you're still a teen is pretty small, quite frankly, given just how much has to be determined and done.
So one of the things you mentioned here is this Digital Safety Commission, which is this body that will set standards for companies and enforce and issue fines. What do you think some of the challenges would be with leaving so much of the detail to a body that, like you said, hasn't been set up yet?
Well, I just think that as a start, it clearly creates just an enormous amount of uncertainty, frankly, for those that are looking for solutions and for those that may find themselves subject to compliance, because we're starting quite literally from zero. And I appreciate that someone has to enforce this. The CRTC, I don't think, is an appropriate venue for that. And so a Digital Safety Commission, in that sense, makes some sense. You need someone to do this. And ideally, you want a body that's got some real expertise. But all this is going to take a lot of time. And in a prior bill, the government tried to apportion some of this out through a three-pronged approach. So they had a commission, they had a digital safety office, and they had a digital safety ombudsperson. And so the idea was that there would be different responsibilities. Some would be involved in the enforcement and regulation. Some would take in complaints. Some would raise awareness and literacy and skills so that people could do a better job of navigating some of these kinds of challenges. They've now brought all of that into this single body. And so when you do that, that means you've got a single body that develops regulations and guidance. It assesses the compliance. It manages complaints. It conducts audits, issues compliance orders. It levies the penalties, decides the exemptions that we just talked about. So there is just a ton there. Much of the entire system is going to be paid for by the companies that are being regulated. At least that's what the government says. But all of these issues are still to be determined.
So when we talk about penalties that this Digital Safety Commission can enforce, it's the maximum penalty for contravening the new law would be $10 million or 3% of the gross global revenue of the offending company. I'm curious, is the value created by people under 16, like, would that kind of fine make sense? Like, how important are kids under 16 to these companies?
Well, I think they're surely important. I don't think that the penalty numbers, which it should be noted actually are slightly lower than they were in a prior iteration. So the government's lowering this perhaps with an eye to potential pressure from the United States. We've seen this play out on other digital laws. Perhaps they're thinking about what can they put forward that is likely to pass muster with the U.S. and not become yet another red flag from a trade perspective. But I think for these companies, listen, we're talking about some of the wealthiest companies in the world. And so at the end of the day, they're able certainly to take on some of these penalties, especially if it's the dollar amount. Once you get into percentage of revenues, then it becomes increasingly significant. And lots of countries or jurisdictions are using that general model. So I don't think it is really about the value of kids. Some of these services will tell you, let's say in the iSpace, they are happy to to apportion out or keep out certain of these kids. And even in social media, the very youngest of those kids, many of the services don't want on their platform either. But I think the penalties aren't really there as part of an assessment of the value. It's more about trying to send a strong signal that, you know, the government takes this seriously. It wants to ensure that there's compliance, and they've got the hammer of potentially significant penalties where companies fail to meet those requirements.
One of the core tensions here is that the Canadian government is trying to introduce regulations for companies that are mainly based in the US, right? And we've seen other situations where either the companies pull out of the market entirely, and that's what happened with Meta, with the Online News Act. Why would this be any different?
Well, it might not, although I think that the general move towards greater safety measures in dealing with these platforms is, in fact, a global phenomenon. We are seeing this take place everywhere because the concerns are similar in different places. You know, in the case of the Online News Act and Meta didn't pull out. It removed one of the functionalities within some of its services on Facebook and Instagram. The real question, I think, is not so much is a company going to pull out altogether. I'm not sure that there's anything in here that would leave a company saying they can't continue to operate at all in Canada. Although, again, we'll see what some of the specifics are. You never know. There might be some specifics that they say they can't live with. I guess a real possibility, though, is that there might be certain services that they offer that they say they can't offer in Canada, given some of the requirements they face. You know, at this stage, I don't know that there's anything there that even hits that threshold, in part because we don't have the specifics. And so I think at the moment, the companies will probably say, we want to be able to work with this and the duty to act responsibly and standing up some sort of regulator to deal with that, kind of meet some of their expectations in terms of some of the kinds of things they're facing in multiple jurisdictions. So it's not a completely new concept. Where they're more likely to have concerns is going to be certainly at the very top, just the amount of uncertainty with this legislation. And then also, I think things like bans, the potential coverage far beyond what you might typically expect in terms of social media or AI chatbots are also, I think, going to get some of those companies' attention.
You bring up this idea about duty to act responsibly and that companies are, you know, willing to do this. But I'm just always thinking about this, like, is there too much onus on the companies to do the right thing here? Like, what do you think it takes to actually compel a company to do the right thing?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that sort of self-regulation alone has not worked. And so regulation is needed. Now, I think we have to recognize going in, of course, these are powerful companies, but it isn't so much the power of these companies. It's that they come in with their own sets of expectations, their own concerns, their own expertise, quite frankly, in dealing with some of these issues. We should recognize for all the criticisms of these companies, and there is plenty and plenty of it that is well deserved. They are companies that by and large have established pretty large, robust digital safety teams. They've got expertise in some of these issues, and even if they don't follow through in the way that we would hope, and that's why this next step is needed, that beats some of the alternatives that we do see online as well, where there are companies that simply say, we're going to just treat this as a Wild West and not really concern ourselves with these obligations at all. So, you know, I think companies have invested in this, but there are clearly unseen tensions that exist in many instances for some of these companies. And that's why it is appropriate to step forward with regulatory frameworks.
On the frameworks here, chatbots is also part of this proposed legislation. And when it comes to chatbots, the companies still have a duty to act responsibly. They also have to be more transparent with the tools and processes that flag harmful content. But for chatbots, there is no age restriction like with social media. What do you make of the fact that they haven't added age restrictions to chatbots?
Yeah, I think the government struck the right balance when it comes to AI chatbots. You know, I think it's kind of difficult to launch an AI strategy focused on adoption and use by Canadians last week and come back the following week and say you're going to actively exclude a whole segment of the population from even being able to use those services. I think they are critically important. They've got a range of different uses. And the idea that we would exclude a whole segment of users harms that segment of users. I think there is real value in these technologies and creating a society where people don't have the opportunity to actively engage with AI until they turn 17. I don't think sets them up very well for the future. You know, I think the elements where they have focused on were the right ones. So that duty to act responsibly is something that we've seen in the United States at the state level trying to deal with some of these issues. They've identified certain concerns that can pop up with these services, and they're trying to deal with that. And the transparency piece when it comes to AI, I think, is critically important. You know, in light of the Tumblr Ridge case, it really shouldn't take the minister of AI a meeting with company officials to know what the corporate policies are when they're dealing with those kinds of issues. You know, everybody should know it. And so being able to ensure that we've got greater transparency associated with that is the right thing to do. And I would add that I also think it was the right approach to say that for now, we are not going to rush to require greater levels of disclosures or alerting law enforcement or other authorities based on chatbot conversations. And I know some were looking for that, but to recognize chatbot conversations aren't like public spaces in social media where people are actively engaging. These oftentimes are a lot of private communications, and suddenly requiring intermediaries, whether AI services or cloud services that might host digital diaries or things like that, and saying, well, we want you to actively monitor what people are saying and potentially then alert law enforcement or other authorities. Moving in that direction creates some real risks. And it seems to me that at a minimum, you need very high thresholds before we jump into that kind of potentially automated reporting.
I got to say something that's kind of surprising to me, and maybe it's just because I'm a bit naive, but, you know, we've seen the harms of social media and now kind of like backtracking to fix what's happened, right? And now we have this opportunity with chatbots that, in fact, here they are. And, you know, there's been kind of this conversation around, yeah, it's actually, let's give it some space. We don't know what the technology is going to do yet. It's too early to say. But I mean, doesn't it make sense to kind of create legislation in tandem with this technology as it's developing instead of kind of letting it see the harms it might do? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's about letting us see the harms. I mean, because I think this technology really does represent one where we can, you know, rapidly identify some of the real benefits, but, you know, easily recognize that there are some risks as well. So I think the starting point where there are requirements to mitigate certain risks is where they're starting. Having a better understanding of these services and what takes place by requiring transparency, I also think is really valuable and quite important. Too much of this is just really unseen. People just don't have a real sense of what takes place. You know, it's pretty clear that legislating, at least in this space, is difficult because, as we've been talking about, this is going to take years, I think, to fully develop when this area is going to be different in a week or two in terms of even just some of the kinds of models, because new ones are coming all the time. That means, I think, that we ought not be about regulating particular models per se, but rather setting the appropriate frameworks and bringing in these services into regulatory frameworks. And that seems to me to be where the government is starting. Though I can recognize some will say, hey, even more is needed. But part of the more, and we talked about privacy a little earlier, is the privacy side of this. Because if this is a two-sided coin in some ways, one side is the harms when we think about these services. The other, of course, is our data and the privacy-related issues, concerns about potential misuse. And, you know, the fact that there are even privacy concerns with the solutions is a bit ironic. I would expect that we will see very soon the government put forward that other side of the coin with some sort of privacy legislation. And then we can better judge, I think, the whole of what they have in mind in terms of dealing with online safety as well as AI safety, which identified those two issues as two of their North Stars.
Okay, so we're still waiting for that privacy puzzle piece, I guess. So on this proposed legislation that was introduced on Wednesday, when can we expect to see any of this come into effect?
We are looking at, you know, a pretty lengthy process. This bill isn't going anywhere right now, and the government is going to break for the summer, probably sometime next week. So that means that they will be starting from scratch. No doubt they will be hearing from many Canadians. Everybody has an opinion about this over the summer. I would expect that we will see into the fall and potentially even into 2027, this bill slowly making its way through committee. A lot of people will want to be heard. It will then go to the Senate and we'll see much the same thing. You know, the government has a majority, so we could see that bill passed sometime next year. But even with that passage, that, as we've been saying, is really just the starting point. And we are talking about many months, potentially years in some cases, before all of these various rules are sorted out and certain of the obligations begin to take effect.
Government experts kept hammering this idea that changes at a societal level are important, right? And they brought up this idea that we have laws around seatbelts, but not everyone wears a seatbelt. But this change in law was important, right? Like, what do you make of that? You know, isn't there something to the fact that we do have to make changes at a societal level, and that perhaps this is kind of the step in the right direction? Like, this bill's not perfect, but shouldn't we at least maybe give it a chance?
Well, yeah, and I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't. Yeah. As I say, I think there are elements here that are good. In fact, you know, I think my case would be that, you know, we would have done better to have had a narrowly tailored bill focused on the elements, frankly, that were a little bit road tested in the past with the last piece of legislation that, frankly, there was generally a fair amount of acceptance of. At the margins, of course, there's always going to be some amount of disagreement, but you can fix some of that. And actually then sort of signal not just that the government is acting, but acting urgently with a real priority, because they were introducing something that, you know, had a real likelihood of, if not sailing through, moving quite quickly through this process.
You're talking about platform regulation here,
I'm talking
right?
about the pure platform regulation piece, right. Exactly. And it seems to me that if there's a disappointment here, which I think those that really have been calling for this kind of legislation for a long time now, for me, if I was in that camp, I would be disappointed because the government has once again loaded in so much. Last go around, they loaded in things that dealt with the Criminal Code and the Human Rights Act that became in many ways a distraction and a big source of concern, and it bogged the legislation down such that it ultimately died when the government had an election call. And in this instance, you know, including things like the social media ban, including so much uncertainty associated with the law, including some of the pornography-related stuff with mandated age verification that cuts across multiple kinds of services, I think all of this is going to prove to be enormously contentious. That's where we're going to spend a lot of our time. And the parts that could have made a difference more quickly are going to languish. And so to me, part of the mistake here is that government is going with almost an omnibus style legislation, throwing everything in. It's almost a kitchen sink approach when it comes to this. And it seems to me that a more narrowly tailored approach would have been both more effective, more likely to pass quickly, more likely to send the kind of message that you referenced to the public, saying we want to send a signal that this isn't a Wild West. We want to have regulations and we want to ensure that they're enforceable. And instead, I think they've set themselves up and set the public up for just this very long, arduous debate in which nobody is left really satisfied, because they're going to have concerns about uncertainty, concerns about what's in the bill, and then, of course, for some, concerns about what's taking so long.
Michael, leave it there. Thank you so much.
Oh, that was great. Thanks so much for having me.
That was Michael Geist, a law professor at the University of Ottawa and the Canada Research Chair in Internet and E-commerce Law. That's it for today. I'm Cheryl Sutherland. Our intern and associate producer is Cynthia Jimenez. Our producers are Madeline White, Rachel Levy-McLaughlin, and Michal Stein. Our editor is David Crosby. Adrian Chung is our senior producer, and Angela Pacenza is our executive editor. Thanks for listening.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at @LawBitesPod or follow Michael Geist at @MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.